All right, so you asked for it, and here it is, our deep dive into digital representation. It seems like you really want to get into the nitty-gritty of how the real world, things like images and videos, gets translated into the language computers speak, that whole world of ones and zeros.
Yeah, it's a fascinating journey for sure, going from the physical world we experience with our senses to those digital representations that power so much of our technology.
And to tackle this, we've gathered a whole bunch of sources, some focusing on the basics, some delving into really complex applications, and even some touching on, philosophical implications. Our mission, should we choose to accept it, is to distill all that down into the core ideas that everyone should know. And of course, we're always on the lookout for those surprising insights, those little nuggets that make you go, "Huh, never thought of it that way before."
Right, like the stuff that kind of shifts your perspective a bit.
Exactly. So, to start, I think it's helpful to define what we mean by digital representation. What is it at its most fundamental level?
So, at its heart, it's the bridge between the analog world, which is continuous, and the digital world, which is discrete. Like, think of a video in the real world, it's light constantly changing, but a computer can only work with distinct pieces of information.
Right. So it's like taking that continuous flow of light and chopping it up into individual frames, those snapshots that make up the video.
Exactly. Digital representation is about taking those continuous signals, whether it's light, sound, or any other physical phenomenon, and converting them into a series of numerical values that a computer can then process and store.
And that's where binary code comes in, right? The famous ones and zeros.
Absolutely. Binary is the fundamental language of computers. It's a system where you only have two possible states, zero or one, like a switch that's either on or off.
But how do you represent complex information with just those two states? I mean, the world's not black and white.
It's all about combinations. By stringing together those zeros and ones in different sequences, you can represent any number. Like in a simple 8-bit system, you have 8 slots, each with a zero or a one. That gives you 256 different possible combinations, from 00000000 to 111111.
Okay, so it's like a code where each combination of ones and zeros corresponds to a specific number.
Precisely. And that's the basis for how computers do everything from simple arithmetic to complex calculations and representing everything from text to images and sound.
So let's say I'm recording my voice on a microphone. That's an analog signal, right? Those sound waves are continuous. How does that get turned into the ones and zeros that a computer can work with?
That's the job of an analog to digital converter, or ADC.
Okay, like a translator for the computer.
Exactly. The ADC samples the analog signal at regular intervals, like taking snapshots of the sound wave. For each sample, it measures the amplitude, which is the strength or intensity of the signal at that moment. Then it converts that amplitude measurement into a digital value, a binary number that represents that specific moment in the sound wave.
So the more frequently the ADC samples, the more accurate the digital representation.
Exactly. And there's another factor, resolution. It's measured in bits, and it refers to how many distinct levels the ADC can use to represent the amplitude of the signal. More bits mean more detail.
Okay, so more bits, more detail, like having a higher resolution camera for photos.
Precisely. For example, a 16-bit ADC can distinguish between over 65,000 different levels, which captures a lot more nuance than, say, an 8-bit ADC.
That makes sense. Now, while binary is the core, I've noticed that other number systems pop up, like decimal and hexadecimal.
Oh, yeah. We use decimal base 10 in our everyday lives because it's intuitive for us, but it's not the most efficient for computers to work with directly.
And hexadecimal, that's base 16, right? I usually see that in web design and things like that.
Right. Hexadecimal is super handy because each hexadecimal digit represents exactly 4 binary digits. It's a compact way for humans to work with larger binary numbers.
So it's like shorthand for binary code, but still ultimately based on those ones and zeros underneath.
Exactly. Now, let's shift gears and talk about how all of this applies to video specifically. There is a big shift from analog to digital video. What drove that transition?
Like, why did we ditch those old VHS tapes?
Well, for starters, the quality of digital video is way better. It's less prone to degradation, so you don't get that fuzzy, snowy picture over time.
And I'm guessing it's easier to edit and copy without losing quality.
Absolutely. Digital video makes it super simple to make edits, add effects, and copy files without losing any information. Plus, digital storage is way more compact than those bulky VHS tapes.
And it opened up a whole world of new possibilities, right? Like streaming services, video conferencing, all that stuff wouldn't exist without digital video.
You got it. Digital video revolutionized how we consume and interact with moving images. And it's still evolving rapidly.
One thing I noticed was the constant push for higher resolutions, HD, 2K, 4K, 8K. It seems like it never ends.
It's true. The entire video industry, from TV broadcasts to digital cinema, is constantly striving for higher resolution, more detail, more immersive experiences.
And all of that is driven by advancements in digital representation, right?
Yeah.
The ability to capture, store, and process those massive amounts of data.
Exactly. And digital cinema is a great example. It's not just about resolution. Digital filmmaking has revolutionized the entire process, from shooting on digital cameras to editing, distributing, and even projecting movies in theaters.
Okay, let's zoom in on digital cinema for a bit. What are some of the key ways digital representation has changed how movies are made and shown?
Well, for one, digital cameras offer so much more flexibility than film. Filmmakers can shoot for longer durations, instantly review footage, and manipulate the images in post-production with incredible precision.
And it's not just about the cameras, right? Digital projection in theaters has also been a game changer.
Absolutely. Digital projectors deliver those super sharp, high-resolution images we're used to today. They also make it possible to show 3D movies and other special formats that wouldn't be feasible with traditional film projectors.
And I'm sure it simplifies distribution as well. No more shipping those heavy film reels around.
Exactly. Digital distribution is much more efficient and cost-effective. It also allows for tighter control over piracy, which was a big concern with physical film prints.
Now let's switch gears again and talk about still images. Once an image is captured digitally, it needs a place to live, a format to be saved in. And there are a ton of those, right? Like JPEG, PNG, TIFF, and a bunch more.
It can seem overwhelming, but essentially each image file format has its own strengths and weaknesses. Some are great for compressing images to save space, while others prioritize preserving the highest possible image quality, even if it means larger file sizes.
So how do you know which format to use?
It really depends on what you're planning to do with the image. For example, if you're sharing photos online, a JPEG is usually a good choice because it compresses the image without sacrificing too much detail. But if you're a professional photographer working with high-resolution images that you need to edit extensively, you might choose a TIFF or RAW format to retain the maximum amount of information.
And when it comes to video, which is essentially a sequence of still images, we need codecs, right? Yeah.
You got it. A codec determines how video data is compressed to make it manageable for storage and transmission. It's like a special language that encodes the video information in a more compact way.
So different codecs have different ways of compressing the video data.
Exactly. Some codecs are lossy, which means they discard some information to achieve smaller file sizes. Others are lossless, meaning they preserve all the original data, but the files tend to be larger.
And I'm guessing the choice of codec affects the quality of the video.
Absolutely. A high-quality codec can deliver stunning video with very little noticeable compression, but it might require more processing power to decode. A lower-quality codec might create smaller files, but you might see some artifacts or blockiness in the video, especially in scenes with a lot of motion.
Okay, so choosing the right codec is a balancing act between file size, quality, and the processing power you have available.
Exactly. Now, one area of digital imaging that I find particularly intriguing is high dynamic range imaging, or HDRI.
Yeah, HDR seems to be everywhere these days, from TVs to smartphones. What's the big deal about it?
The goal of HDRI is to capture and display a much wider range of brightness levels than traditional cameras or displays can handle. It's about capturing those super bright highlights and deep shadows with all the detail and nuance that exists in the real world.
So it's like seeing the world with a wider range of vision, like having sunglasses that can also see in the dark.
That's a great analogy. A typical camera has a limited dynamic range, which means it can only capture a certain amount of contrast between the brightest and darkest parts of a scene. HDRI aims to overcome that limitation.
So with HDR, you could capture both the intricate details in the shadows and the brilliant highlights of a sunset without losing information in either extreme.
Exactly. Now, capturing HDRI often involves taking multiple exposures of the same scene at different brightness levels and then combining those exposures using special software to create a single image with a wider dynamic range.
But if our screens and monitors can't actually display that full range of brightness, what's the point? That's where tone mapping comes in, right?
Precisely. Tone mapping is a process that takes that HDR image with its wide range of brightness values and compresses it into a range that a standard display can handle.
So it's like shrinking that vast visual space into a smaller container, but hopefully without losing too much of the detail.
Exactly. There are different tone mapping techniques, some more sophisticated than others, but the goal is to create a visually pleasing image that retains as much of the original HDR information as possible.
Now, beyond brightness, there's the whole issue of color reproduction. It seems like colors can shift at every stage, from the scene being captured to how it's stored, displayed, and ultimately perceived by our eyes.
You're absolutely right. Every step in that process can introduce color variations. Different camera sensors and film stocks interpret and record colors differently. Then you have the display devices like monitors and printers, which also have their own color characteristics and limitations.
So the color you see on your screen might not be a perfectly faithful representation of the real-world scene.
Exactly. But to manage this, we have color management systems that try to standardize how colors are handled throughout the workflow.
So it's like having a common language for color that everyone in the process cameras, displays, software can understand.
Precisely. And one important aspect of color management is understanding the difference between linear and nonlinear color encoding.
That sounded pretty technical when I came across it. Can you break it down for us?
Sure. In simple terms, linear encoding means that the digital values representing color are directly proportional to the amount of light in the scene. But for various reasons, including efficiency and matching how our eyes perceive light, we often use nonlinear encoding.
So nonlinear encoding intentionally modifies the color data. Why would you want to do that?
The main benefit is efficiency. Our eyes are much more sensitive to brightness differences in dark areas than in bright areas. Nonlinear encoding takes advantage of this by allocating more digital bits to those darker tones, which allows us to use fewer bits overall without sacrificing too much perceived quality.
Okay, so it's like using your resources wisely to capture the information that our eyes are most sensitive to.
Exactly. But when you're doing things like compositing images or color correction, it's generally best to work with the data in a linear representation to avoid unexpected results.
And I remember reading about scene-referred data. How does that relate to color encoding?
Scene-referred data is all about storing images with values that are directly proportional to the actual light measurements of the scene itself. It's like removing the color signature of the specific camera that captured the image.
So it's a way to create a more objective representation of the light in the scene, independent of the capture device.
Exactly. It makes it much easier to achieve consistency when displaying images on different devices or when combining footage from different sources.
And finally, there's the concept of limited bit depth. Historically, digital images often had only 8 or 16 bits per color channel to work with. How did they manage to represent a wide range of brightness and color with such limited resources?
It involved a lot of clever techniques. One common approach was to carefully define the white point and black point within that limited bit range. This effectively stretched the available digital values to cover the most important parts of the scene's luminance, but it could lead to clipping or loss of detail in extreme highlights or shadows.
So it was a trade-off between capturing the full range of brightness and preserving detail in specific areas.
Exactly. It's a bit like trying to fit a vast landscape onto a small canvas. You have to make choices about what to emphasize and what to leave out.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground on video and images. Now let's talk about something seemingly simpler. The digital representation of characters, the letters and symbols we use for writing.
It's an area that's often taken for granted, but it's become surprisingly complex, especially with the globalization of digital communication.
Because it's not just about representing the English alphabet anymore.
Exactly. We need to be able to represent characters from all sorts of writing systems, alphabets, syllabaries, ideograms from all over the world. And that's where the Unicode standard comes in.
Right. Unicode. I hear that term a lot.
Unicode is a universal character encoding standard that aims to provide a unique code point for every character in every writing system, past and present.
So it's like a global dictionary for computers, ensuring that every character has a unique digital representation.
Precisely. This is crucial for creating software and websites that can handle multilingual text effectively, allowing people from different cultures and languages to communicate seamlessly in the digital world.
Now, digital representation goes beyond media like video, images, and text. It underpins so much modern technology, including how we transmit data.
Absolutely. In digital data transmission, information is conveyed using those discrete on-off states, those ones and zeros, which are represented by high and low voltage levels in electrical signals.
It's like sending pulses of electricity down a wire where each pulse represents a bit of information.
Exactly. Digital data transmission is far more robust against noise and interference compared to old analog methods. It's also much more efficient in terms of bandwidth utilization, meaning we can send more data faster over the same physical channels.
And I imagine this digital approach is what has enabled the incredible growth of the internet and all the data-intensive applications we use today.
You got it. The entire telecommunications industry is moving towards digital networks, like fiber optic cables, which can transmit vast amounts of data at incredibly high speeds with minimal signal loss.
And finally, let's talk about digital twins, a concept that seems to be gaining a lot of traction lately. How does digital representation play into this idea?
Digital twins are essentially virtual representations of physical entities or systems, buildings, machines, even entire cities. These digital counterparts are built using various forms of digital representation, 3D models, sensor data, simulations, and more.
So it's like having a virtual copy of a physical thing that you can interact with and learn from.
Precisely. The specific type of digital representation used for a digital twin depends on its intended purpose. For example, a digital twin of a wind turbine might combine a 3D model with real-time sensor data to monitor its performance and predict maintenance needs.
And what about more complex systems, like a whole city?
A digital twin of a city could incorporate data from various sources, traffic sensors, weather stations, energy grids, to simulate how the city functions and test different scenarios like traffic flow optimization or emergency response planning.
So digital twins can be incredibly powerful tools for understanding and managing complex systems in the real world.
Absolutely. And they're being used in all sorts of fields, manufacturing, healthcare, urban planning, you name it.
Speaking of healthcare, I know that applying digital twin technology in that domain presents some unique challenges.
Definitely. Healthcare is a very sensitive and demanding field. For digital twins to be effective in healthcare, they require extremely high data rates, low latency communication, robust security, and perhaps most importantly, AI systems that are accurate, reliable, and trustworthy.
It sounds like creating truly effective digital twins in healthcare requires a very high level of sophistication in both the digital representation and the AI algorithms that drive them.
It's a big challenge, but the potential benefits are enormous. Imagine being able to simulate the effects of different treatments on a virtual patient before administering them in the real world, or using digital twins to personalize healthcare plans based on an individual's unique genetic makeup and lifestyle.
It's amazing to think about the possibilities, but it also highlights the ethical considerations we need to grapple with as this technology advances.
Absolutely. We need to ensure that digital twins are used responsibly and ethically, especially in sensitive areas like healthcare, where people's lives and well-being are at stake.
Shifting gears one last time, this whole shift towards digital representation has obviously had a huge impact on knowledge systems, the way we create, share, and access information.
It's been a profound transformation. We've gone from predominantly print-based media like books and journals to a world where digital text and multimedia are the primary means of accessing knowledge.
And the internet has completely changed the game, right?
Absolutely. The internet has democratized access to information in ways that were unimaginable just a few decades ago. It's also fostered new forms of collaboration and knowledge creation, like online encyclopedias and open access journals.
And it's not just about text anymore, is it? Digital media allows for this seamless blending of different modes of information, text, images, videos, sound. It's multimodality at its core.
Exactly. Digital media allows us to create rich and engaging learning experiences that go far beyond the limitations of traditional print. And it's constantly evolving with new platforms and formats emerging all the time.
One concept I came across was the semantic web. How does that fit into this evolution of knowledge systems?
The semantic web is all about adding meaning and structure to digital information, making it more understandable to machines, so to speak. It involves using standardized vocabularies and ontologies to describe the relationships between different pieces of information, making it easier to search, analyze, and reuse that information in different contexts. So it's about moving beyond simply presenting information visually and towards making it more machine readable, which opens up a whole new world of possibilities for automated reasoning and knowledge discovery.
Exactly. Imagine a world where computers can not only access vast amounts of information, but also understand the meaning and relationships within that information, enabling them to answer complex questions, generate new insights, and even help us solve some of the world's most pressing problems.
It sounds both exciting and a little daunting. We've covered so much in this deep dive, from the fundamental principles of binary code to the far-reaching implications of digital twins and the semantic web.
It's a testament to how pervasive digital representation has become in our lives. It's the invisible force that shapes so much of our modern world, from the way we communicate and entertain ourselves to how we work, learn, and even think. So, to recap for everyone, digital representation is the process of converting analog information, the stuff of the real world, into the digital language of ones and zeros that computers understand. It's the foundation for everything from the videos we watch to the photos we share, the music we listen to, and the very words we read on our screens.
And as digital technology continues to evolve at an astonishing pace, the ways we represent and interact with information will undoubtedly continue to change in profound and unpredictable ways.
Which leads to a thought-provoking question for our listeners. As digital representation becomes even more sophisticated and integrated into our lives, how will it shape our understanding of reality itself? What new forms of knowledge and experience will emerge in this increasingly digital world? And what are the ethical and societal implications we need to consider as we venture further into this uncharted territory?
It's an ongoing conversation that we all need to be part of as we shape the future of our digital world.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into digital representation. We hope you found it informative and thought-provoking.
Until next time.